Hello, dear viewers, I mean listeners, and welcome to Toonami Therapy. We're recording March 19th of 2024. I'm Michael.
I'm Tommy.
And this is our podcast where we record our thoughts on things that are involved and related to anime, some of which actually air on Toonami. So, yes. All right. I've been doing this opening thing where I've been trying to make myself really sound really awkward as a joke. Except it's not a joke. I actually did use those clunky phrases by complete accident. Okay. Well, we can jump right into it, I guess. We've got Ninja Kamui Episode 6. So, since I can never remember anyone's name, just the female FBI agent person turned out, oh yeah, she was the one who was actually secretly helping Hidan this whole time, Hidan. I told you I can't remember people's names. So she's the one who rescued him, helps heal him. She ends up going out in a mech suit, because I guess this is a mech show now.
Yeah.
To fight another guy, and then they fight, there's a bunch of that also. Also, it seems that also we get some stuff in her backstory, and then she apparently dies in the fight. I say apparently because it's not clear, but we did get like the whole, oh hey, here's my backstory thing. So there's a pretty good chance it's an actual death at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was this episode. I'll be honest, while I'm kind of annoyed that it looks like she died, considering they had finally made me care about her character, I honestly thought this was one of the best episodes of the show, because I kind of understood what was going on pretty well, and I don't know, it's going to retroactively get a lot worse if it turns out she just died, and that's it, because I was thinking, yay, okay, here's a character that I've kind of suddenly started to care for a bit. I could have done without, I guess, a bad guy making it seem like every sentence he made into some sort of innuendo. So, yeah, still not, like, I think amazing, but I honestly did enjoy this episode a decent amount.
It wasn't that bad, so I guess that's a win for this. So, I mean, I'm still totally confused as to what's going on. I honestly don't know anything.
I'll be honest, I'm still kind of confused about some of the macro stuff, as you'd say, but as long as I get the things like, okay, these guys are fighting, why are they fighting? Okay, I understand why they're fighting. I don't necessarily need to know all the big stuff, like how the Legion of Doom, who I don't think showed up in this episode, actually factor into everything. But I think I kind of get enough of it that I understand what's going on. I don't know if it's just a case of, because I don't think the plot is that complicated, so maybe I'm just dumb, or maybe the show doesn't do a good job explaining it.
I think the Legion showed up in like a really brief scene at the very end, and that was it. So yeah, I guess, what, do I have this show twice in the top three? Yeah, I do. I'm not sure if it'll make it there this week, but it was better than usual. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yep. Well, we'll find out next week if the series has defied the expectation of having the character die right after we get more backstory information on them. Mm-hmm. Or maybe she'll seem like she died, but then we'll show up in the last episode. I guess we'll see. Anyway, moving on to Demon Slayer, episode 43. So, things seem pretty bad for Tanjiro, but because it seems a bunch of the other important characters have been beaten. So the bad guy spends a lot of time monologuing to Tanjiro. Like, let me put it this way. So he was talking for a bunch, and I had to, like, stop watching for a minute or two. I kind of had to leave quickly. And then I came, and then I'm thinking, okay, I guess I'll just, like, you know, come watch this bit later. And I when I start watching again, he's still monologuing. Anyway, but ultimately, Tanjiro is able to attack him. Sound Ashira guy manages to, you know, get back and fight. Everyone's along with Inosuke, who says he can move his organs around, which is how he survived this being, you know, impaled through the chest. So they all manage to work together and beat the two demon siblings, and then, except then, the bad guys. Body seems to explode, and if you were thinking that there might be even the slightest chance that Tanjiro got killed as a result of this, don't worry, the preview shows he's just fine.
Spoiler alert. yeah, that bad guy had a lot of stuff to say. He had a lot to get off his chest, and so Tanjiro had to hear it. So, yeah. I feel like if they would have cut that monologuing in half, this might have been a better episode. It wasn't bad, although I love how Inosuke is able to shift the positions of his... I don't even know what that means. I mean, that's one of those crazy anime things. But yeah, it wasn't a bad episode. I just felt like that guy went on way too long. Like, if you cut his monologue in half, then I think it's a good episode.
Yes. Well, I do. Honestly, some parts of this made me think like it was kind of the thing you'd see in like JoJo, where Tanjiro, you know, he runs away, but then it turns out, no, he was only faking running away because he was grabbing the weapon. And then he made sure when he was doing it to throw a bunch of sand and stuff around to help disguise it. I'm thinking, okay, that's the kind of strategy you totally see on JoJo. It seems like kind of a small thing, but yes, a character going, yes, I spread this thing across and was only faking this and blah, 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 all that stuff. Although they usually wouldn't have as much of a monologue, I don't think. I know Dio was certainly talked a bunch to himself, you know, in like the 10 seconds he was able to freeze time. He spent, you know, half a minute talking, but he wasn't quite as extreme as this. And yeah, also the whole, yes, I moved my internal organs around is what you would see in JoJo, although usually that would just be something a stand did.
Yeah.
Okay. So yes, it was, the action stuff was good, but all the talking was, well, a bit much. All right. So then we've got Licorice Recoil episode 9. To go through this one quick, we find out the bad guys managed to make it so Chisato's heart won't be able to recharge, so she's only got 2 months to live.
Mandatory fun.
Yeah, and then they do dang, I'm not sure exactly how to explain that. What was the mandatory fun thing in reference to again? Wasn't that the part where people were saying that? Yeah, I see. I remember
where
now.
They spent half the episode with talking about forcing Chisato to do fun things, but on a very strict time limit.
Okay.
I
for some reason I was having trouble putting the things together, but yes, that was a bunch of the episode. The other things were, you know, Takina getting approval to be brought back to DA, which he wants to do, although, to try to get help for Chisato. And then also there's, you know, we get a bit, some information about backstory things. Yeah, I'm kind of zipping through it, but that was largely the episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of feel like I still enjoy the show, but I feel that I haven't been enjoying it as much on my rewatch as I did the first time through.
Yeah, definitely. And that isn't a thing where it's always like that, because like I'm enjoying Full Metal Panic Fumoku almost as much, if not more, than I did the first time I watched it. But this show just hasn't, I don't know, it doesn't seem as good as it was the first time around, and maybe it was because it was like, okay, this is new, so it has to be good. I don't know.
I did rewatch some of the first season of ReZero, and one thing I noticed is that I do feel like I kind of enjoyed it a little less, and that was the case because I know going in, okay, this time this loop isn't going to matter. He's just going to die and we'll reset. And when you know that going into it, it's less interesting. So maybe Licorice Recoil is a series that works better when you don't know exactly what's going to happen. Like, there's several episodes where there's a twist at the end, and if you already know it's coming, then it's not necessarily as interesting. So I kind of feel like this is a show that's more dependent on you not knowing everything, and when you do, even if in my case I admit I've forgotten some of it, it doesn't work quite as well.
But this goes to my theory about Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, is that if you are my age and you grew up knowing the big twist at the end of The Wrath of Khan because everyone knows it, then the movie really isn't all that good, whereas some of the other Star Trek movies are good regardless of whether you know what's going to happen or not. So that's my thing. I've always felt that The Wrath of Khan is very overrated. And it's for that reason, because the only thing that makes it as good as it was not knowing the surprise at the end, you know?
Are you referring to the stuff with Spock?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. When I watched the movie, I think I knew about that at least in some extent, and I enjoyed it. I just enjoyed it because I thought it worked well with Khan worked as a good villain against Kirk, but maybe if I rewatch it, I won't like it as much. But I remember liking it a lot. Admittedly, I did watch it shortly after I watched, or rather, tried to watch the first Star Trek movie, which I legitimately got bored of midway through and quit watching.
Yeah, that one was pretty boring.
So, all right, and that's it for Toonami, because they didn't have One Piece because they showed the Dragon Ball Z Kai marathon, which we were originally thinking, hey, maybe we'll watch this, you know, at least the first episode. But then we remembered, oh, wait, no, it doesn't start where One Piece was. First, they're going to have the Ninja Kamui rerun, and then they're going to have the Dragon Ball Z Kai marathon, which is kind of weird. Why not put that at the end, or I don't know, maybe it gets the ratings.
Yeah, I had a lot of problems with that. Like, the way they did it, they made it out like, oh, we are doing this big tribute. And it's like, well, if it's your big tribute, why are you just putting stuff on at 2 a.m? Like, you're going to have hardly anyone watch it anyway. So that doesn't seem to me to be a big tribute. Plus, you put in Ninja Kamui a second time. I know it's the subtitle version, but still, you could have had One Piece and had a brand new episode there instead of airing something that just aired 90 minutes ago. And here's the other thing. They just showed a couple of those episodes that they showed in the marathon. They just showed them the last couple of weeks. So that it just did not make much sense at all. And they tried to pass it off as, oh, we're doing this big tribute to, you know, this guy. And it was like, well, it's a nice thought, but you didn't execute it very well. Just putting his shows on at 2 a.m. isn't really really all that good of a tribute to him. It's just kind of like, we have to do this. So, So I didn't think they did a good job with that. That's my two cents.
I didn't mind them putting them in later because it would have a lot of people, including maybe probably us, would have been annoyed if they just said, okay, everything's on reruns this week because of that. So I think putting it later on was fine. I just find it very confusing that they decided to put and cut back One Piece, but then they put the Ninja Kamui rerun and then they did all the stuff. If they had put it in the One Piece spot and then put the Kamui at the end or something, I don't know. I just kind of feel like it wasn't the greatest way to put it in there. Mm-hmm. All right. So nothing to really say in regards to that then. So let's move on to the non-Toonami stuff we watched. We move on to Shangri-La Frontier, episode 16. So, they're still fighting Weathermon, and basically we find out, yes, you can't actually hurt the guy, you just have to survive against him for enough time. So, and the episode is basically them trying to not die against him, and failing on multiple occasions, but they have a bunch of resurrection potions, so that works fine there. Midway through, he also does have his horse, like this giant metal horse thing, show up, which they have to distract. There is a pretty funny bit where Katso needs to hold on to it and just comes up with the idea of, okay, I'll just tie myself to its head, which was kind of funny. Anyway, ultimately, they managed to survive 20 minutes for that. They get to the new level, which apparently when Pencilgon originally tried to fight him with her group, mm-hmm. basically one-shot all of them. So she's like, okay, this time I got a plan. I'll just throw a bunch of holy water on him. And that's literally just where it ends. She just throws the thing at them and is like, yes, he's undead. That will, I guess, defeat him or weaken him somehow.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I have a question. Like, why is he sometimes called Pencil Gon and other times called Pencil Knight?
In the game that they previously knew her from, I can't remember what it was called, but the sort of medieval themed one, her handle, her name in that game was Pencil Knight. In this one, it's Arthur Pencil Gon, and I just call her Pencil Gon because just saying Arthur sounds a little weird. I think they usually say Pencil Gon anyway. That's the reason for the difference. It's usually Pencil Knight in the flashbacks to the other game.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
So this episode was basically just a bunch of action, and I feel it honestly worked for the most part, surprisingly. I've previously complained about, oh, they're just doing video game stuff and it usually doesn't work, but this time it kind of felt like it did for me, maybe because it felt like there was at least some kind of stakes, like, okay, it's all a video game, but they did have to, you know, spend a whole ton of in-game money and time to get all the resources for this fight, and if they don't win it, then all that's down the drain and they won't be able to try to do this again. I mean, I'm pretty sure they're going to win, but at least it shows that it's actually important they win. And there's actually seems to be a bit more actual sort of strategy into it. The part where, again, Katso just ties themselves to the the horse's head. That was kind of funny. So yeah, on the whole, I did enjoy the episode a decent amount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really have much to add.
Okay. All right. So then we've got my teen romantic comedy, Snafu, episode 25. So basically the episode is Valentine's Day episode, where everyone is trying to make chocolate. Someone comes up with the idea, why don't we just, you know, have a big cooking class event to make all the chocolate together? So they do that. And yeah, that's most of the episode, really. Although when they're all going home, they run across Yukino's mother, who seems kind of annoyed that she wasn't home yet, but then, and Yukino's like, yeah, well, we were just, you know, at that club doing the thing, so, yeah, and, yeah, that was the general plot of the episode.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought while I was watching it, it was pretty good. hearing the description of it makes me feel like, well, maybe it wasn't that good. But
that is literally the experience I had. After I gave the description, I suddenly thought, huh, maybe it wasn't as good as I thought when I watched it.
Yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it, so I don't have any real analysis for it. I'm waiting for the dominoes to start to fall with because there has to be a romance story in here somewhere. And it's like, okay, well, it hasn't happened the first two seasons, so maybe it happens in the third season's the big season for the big romance, for the big love triangle and all that. I keep waiting for it to happen, and it hasn't happened yet. So I'm like, okay, when are they going to get to it? So I'm going to make a bet they don't do it in the... Well, you know what? They could. They could leave the season off on a cliffhanger. So I won't rule it out, but yeah, that's what I've got.
Yeah, I will say that for, you know, the series that's literally called My Teen Romantic Comedy Snafu, there really has not been that much romance in the series. Mm-hmm. Like, there's comedy stuff, sure, but like really very little romance stuff, it seems. Maybe that's where the snafu comes up, because they didn't get to the romance stuff yet. They messed up at it. They messed up in trying to make it a romantic comedy. They forgot the romantic part. I mean, the title of the light novel is based on was like My Teen Romantic Comedy Is Wrong As I Expected. So maybe they just, the romantic part is wrong. It's all false advertising.
Where did they get the snafu from?
I'm not sure. That's just what it was called in that. Is it actually, is it a different, do the light novels and the TV show have different names in Japanese? I wonder, let me check this quick, because I'm kind of curious as to whether they might be different, and it's just a case of where they just translated them differently. Let me take a quick look in regards to this. Yeah, both the My Teen Romantic Comedy Snafu, as well as My Youth Romantic Comedy Is Wrong As I Expected, those are the same It's the same in Japanese. So I guess the people who picked the name for the TV show and the people who picked the name for the light novels when they were translated picked different things. It happens sometimes in that case. Like Rayliana, it was why Rayliana ended up at the Duke's mansion in the anime, but then the source material was called the reason why Rayliana ended up at the Duke's mansion. And and there was another one that had something like that where it was different. Let me just check quickly to on this one so that I can get to make sure I'm giving the names right. Let's see. Okay, right. So this one, this one series that aired, I think maybe about a year ago. It wasn't that great, but it was this anime. And it was called Ningen Fushin: Adventurers Who Don't Believe in Humanity Will Save the World. Okay, but in the light novel, the English translation name is Apparently Disillusioned Adventurers Will Save the World. So though you can obviously see those are kind of similar, but they're different. And there's been some cases where it's like that, where kind of weirdly the anime just is given a different name, a different translation. So that might be a case here. Okay. All right. I guess we can move past that then. We go to Full Metal Panic Fumofu, episode 8.
Yeah, so Tessa finally makes her appearance on the show this season. And so she gets permission to show up at... yeah, it had to have been this show that I laughed about because of the... See where she's in the shower and Sosuke's getting so flustered. That was just great scenes of Sosuke getting like just so flustered over her being there. And basically she shows up and now she's going to school with them and you know, she's really smart, so she can do all these math things. And basically, most of the episode is Sosuke being, like, flustered because she's there and Kaname getting mad because even though she's a tsundere, she still doesn't want Tessa stealing Sosuke off her, so get the whole love triangle thing going on there. And this was a very funny episode.
I actually didn't really like this episode that much. There were some funny bits to it. I the part where they have where the guy is talking about the things he's worried Sosuke might do to Tessa, and there's that weird part where she's in the shower, and then Sosuke just shows up in the giant teddy bear outfit with a banana, and that was funny. But a lot of it I just thought was kind of a bit boring. We get some kind of forced fan service too, but mostly I just kind of was thinking the problem I have is, it kind of felt to me like Tessa was kind of a bit, I remember her being more serious in the original series. And I know this series is a comedy, so the character's traits are exaggerated. But I always felt that Sosuke and Kaname, their basic personalities were the same. I wouldn't even say they're necessarily particularly different. You could even say they're the same personalities as in the first season. It's just that the situations they're in are so wacky that it just causes them to be exaggerated. It just felt to me like Tessa was just way more less serious and more like kind of goofy than she was in the original series to me. Like, much more flirty, I guess, with Sosuke, which wasn't really a thing there either, from what I remember. More antagonistic with Kaname. I don't know. It just, she felt very, she and her interactions with them felt very different to me compared to the original series. So, I don't know. I kind of felt that it just had the, it kind of felt like this was one of those things where I'm thinking, oh, you know, this would have been better if it had been a bit faster, but they made a full episode out. Well, the next one is a continuation, so we get two full episodes out of it, which seems to be kind of stretching things past where the joke works. So unfortunately, I kind of wasn't really that big on this. There were some pretty funny bits, but for the most part, I thought this was one of the weaker episodes of the show so far, unfortunately. I'll admit, part of it might have been the fact that I wasn't able to watch it dubbed as usual. I had to watch it subbed because when I was watching it where there were some other people, so I had to kind of keep it quiet and put the subs on, which might have had a factor, but I think I probably would have had a similar reaction otherwise. So that's kind of my thoughts on this one.
Okay.
And, of course, it looks like we're doing Hot Springs next episode, so I probably won't like that either. okay. So, all right, we go on to Dark Gathering, Episode 3. So, in this one, after Yayoi is trying to get Keitaro to give him his, to give her his fingernails, which she's freaked out about and doesn't want to, she basically then finds, it turns out that she actually thought that Keitaro was really interested in all this supernatural stuff when he wasn't. So she decides that she's going to try to find a way to cure the curse on him. But in doing so, ends up getting a bit over her head and dealing with a lot of angry spirits. He ends up helping save her. And then, you know, I guess they become a little less antagonistic because he's saying, oh, you were trying to cure me? I didn't know that. And I do think, you could have explained why you wanted his fingernails, because it's actually a pretty reasonable thing. It's, okay, I need to use this so I can make these things to protect you. And I'm thinking, why couldn't you explain that? So, I mean, to be fair, it was really funny when she was asking for it. So I guess we can go with that as the explanation. So, yeah, that was the episode, essentially. I thought it was pretty decent.
Yeah, I thought this was a pretty good episode as well. Although it was confusing to me. And usually don't like confusing things. And I was very confused as to why she went about it that way. Yeah, it felt like she did it for the plot and not much common sense being used there. So, it wasn't bad. It was pretty good.
All right, and that is all our shows for this week. I don't know where I was going with that sentence in retrospect. I guess now, though, we can move on to giving our rankings. There, that's where I was going with the sentence. I was going to say something about we should go on to our rankings. Perfect. My brain is working again, mostly.
Okay.
All right.
So my rankings, first place is Snafu, second place is Dark Gathering, and third place is Demon Slayer.
All right. For me, third place would be Shangri-La Frontier. That's not quite right. I'm going to put, Snafu, I'll put in third place, Shangri-La Frontier in second, and Dark Gathering in first.
Okay.
Is that the order I want to? Let me just think. Ah, it doesn't matter if I mix them up a little. I don't. Unlike you, I'm lazy and I don't keep track of my votes for these, which is why at the end of the year I then start struggling. Wait, what did I actually like this year? So there we go. It'll be something like that. Anyway, Yeah, I guess someone could swap Dark Gathering and Shangri-La Frontier there. If only I remember what order I actually put Demean. All right. So that's the end of our discussions on all of those things. Did you have anything you wanted to talk about? Did you watch any more of Cowboy Bebop?
Yeah. So I'm still watching Cowboy Bebop. And this episode 3, had a lot of problems to it. So just to go through these problems, this isn't an exhaustive list of them, but basically there's this whole plot, like the main plot of the episode is that Jet Black needs to get buy a doll for his daughter. And he can't find this doll anywhere, and it's like this really popular thing. I don't know where they got this from, but so they go, and Spike is being really secretive around him, which again, that wasn't in the original anime. And they're really, really zeroing in on this whole Visus thing. Even though Visus really, in the original anime, showed up like at the middle of the season and then at the end of the season. That was pretty much it. But this show is making him like a huge part of the show. And then there's this, so Spike is like he's busy like getting these messages from this random sushi seller who's telling him like stuff about Visus, and the problems begin whenever, well, I mean, there was already problems, I said, but there's a scene where it feels like they're just like making like a PSA on like domestic violence or something, because it's like it's a scene where Julia shows up again. She hardly showed up at all in the original anime, but she shows up with this one woman who I have no idea who she is, except that she did appear in a previous episode. And she just basically, like, does this speech about how she shouldn't, you know, it's up to her to avoid, you know, whatever's going on. And it very well seemed like a, like, they just put that in there just to like say, okay, we are supporting victims of domestic violence, because there really was no point to the scene at all. And it was like really heavy handed. There wasn't like any nuance to it. So it was just like, okay, we're just bashing people over the head with this PSA. Which I'm not saying that domestic violence is a good thing. I'm just saying, like, I don't know why this scene was even in the show. And then it gets weirder, because now you've got this scene where Jet and Spike are trying to find a bounty on someone, and they end up like with this dominatrix, and it's like it's a really, really adult scene. Like, They don't shy away from making it into halfway into a pornography scene. I mean, it really is close to being pornographic. And I don't know what the point of that scene was either. I mean, this is not a character who ever appeared in the original story. And it's just like they did that just like because they wanted to show like a different lifestyle or something. I don't know. I don't know why that scene was in there. And it was very creepy, very difficult to watch because it felt like I was watching pornography. And so basically, yeah, this episode has all these problems. And then the worst of all the problems is that Ayn, the dog, finally shows up. But instead of it being like a data dog, which it was in the original, it's just kind of like Jet comes across it because this guy wanted to kill people's dogs that he stole. And then Jet, after the guy gets killed, I guess Jet gets the dog and he just brings it to his daughter who loves it. But then her parents show up and they won't let her have the dog. So now Jet is stuck with the dog. But that is way, way, way different from the Ayn story in the original. I mean, it wasn't even close. So I have no idea where they're going with this. I mean, 7 episodes from now, I have no clue where they're going to go with this thing because it's still got 7 episodes left, and they have gone way off the tracks. It isn't even close to what it originally was. So I thought the first episode was pretty good, and I think that the 2 episodes since, it's gotten worse each time.
Did Jet have a daughter in the original series?
I don't think so.
I was trying to think, was there an episode in that? I don't remember that.
No, I don't remember him. No, I don't think so. But I'm trying to give it every benefit of the doubt. With these things, I'm like, okay, maybe it's just been a long time since I saw Cowboy Bebop, but so many of these things have like nothing to do with Cowboy Bebop, and I don't understand why they are in this show.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so also I wanted to say that I finally got around to watching episode 2 of OC No Co, which, it is a different show than it was in the opening movie or whatever you want to call the first episode. It is different, a lot different, but it's still pretty good.
Okay.
And I'm going to continue with OC No Co. I'm going to watch that once a week. And then there's this other show I decided to watch because I got an email recommendation of it from Crunchyroll. And whenever I get these recommendations, typically I check them out if they sound interesting. So this one is called, let's see, what I had it up here. Banished from the Hero's Party, I decided to live a quiet life in the countryside. And it's kind of what it says. You know, it's the guy gets kicked out of being part of a Konosuba-esque group, and now he's doing things like getting medicine for people in the village. And spoiler alert, the email tells me who he gets married to. So I know the girl who shows up at the end of the episode is pretty important because the email told me that she was his wife. So, yeah, I thought it was a pretty decent start. It wasn't anything special, but it was still pretty good.
Okay, so I actually watched the first few episodes of that series. I remember it being okay, but not really enough to keep my interest. What is surprising to me is that being banished from the hero's party seems to basically be a subgenre of like fantasy anime at this point. Like, for example, they had that one. Okay, there's also one called, there's like a bunch of stuff where someone gets, maybe not necessarily even from like the hero's party, but from some important group. I can't remember all the names offhand. Beast Tamer, that was totally a case of that. That was also one of the many cases where it turns out, okay, they don't like him because his power is bad. But it turns out his power is actually the best power. And they just didn't know it. It's like, oh, he can just tame things. That's it. Oh no! It turns out it actually is super great. He just has to meet a bunch of cute animal girls to use it with, which makes him super crazy powerful. And now he's really strong. There was that. What were the others? I'm trying to think of one of them. There was one series. What was the name of that series? I mentioned it to you as like one of the most anime titles ever, right? It was, I think this at least sounds like it. Let me just double check. Yeah, it was, that backstabbed. I'm going to read the title again. Backstabbed in a backwater dungeon. My trusted companions tried to kill me, but thanks to the gift of an unlimited gacha, I got leveled 9,999 friends, and I'm out for revenge on my farmer party members and the world. Yes, that is the actual title. Apparently, it's actually kind of popular, so expect to see this anime form at some point. But yeah, I've seen people making jokes about, yeah, now being banished from the party is a subgenre. Okay. All right. That could be interesting to listen to. All right. That's all of our any more anime discussion?
No.
Okay. Well, that's been our podcast, at least in terms of anime. Where I don't know. Did you want to talk at all about The Amazing Race now that it's back?
We could talk about it.
Don't have to say too much. I'll just put it at the end. Just in, you know, hey, if you're just here for the anime, you can quit now. I'll be honest. I don't have too much to say about the episode. I was just because we're recording this like 6 days afterwards. I've already forgotten most of the episode. Did I make any specific notes on it? I can't remember, but I don't know. Did you have anything to say about it, or?
Not really, okay. Except there was that whole thing where everyone gets to the end and they're so excited, and feels like, okay, you're still racing. Mm-hmm. So, that was pretty humorous. But, yeah, none of the teams really stood out to me. Maybe the one duo of girls, I forget what their names are, Charisma and something else, they were pretty interesting. But overall, the casting didn't seem very interesting. So hopefully some of these teams are more likable. I mean, last season I had a lot of likable teams. Hopefully it's like that this season, but so far no one's really caught my eye yet.
Yeah, there's several I feel I don't like already, although I don't want to mention them just in case I change my mind. Plus, I don't want to be too negative. I guess the two observations I had is I'm pretty sure the father and daughter team, Chris and Mary, they – they like made sure to show like on camera several times, oh yeah, he's like slower than the rest and gets out of breath more easily. So most likely that's probably going to make them lose a race at some point. Cause it was kind of conspicuous how many times they like, you know, made sure to show something about that on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's, yeah, he is the oldest person on this leg. On this race. I don't know. I guess I kind of like the firefighter moms. They were probably the one that stood out the most to me, but not terribly, mm-hmm. I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. All right, that was our like 2-minute discussion on it. I hope you enjoyed it. we might discuss it more, we might discuss it less going on, but that's going to be that all of that. And since we're done with both that and the anime, I guess we'll just be signing off, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.